All right, we are holding, Baruch everyone, we're holding on Test Vav Amud Aleph, second line. So we've been discussing the Gzeiris Yud Ches Dover. We said the Chachamim made 18 Gzeiris. So far we went through about half of them, and then the other half of the Gemara is going to resume later on. Later on, the Gemara is going to resume with the rest of them on Daf Ches Zayin and continue with them. So we said that actually what it was is you had the Talmidim of the Shammah and the Hillel gathered together in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah, and we said that they made these 18 Gzeiris. So the Gemara says, Gufa, so getting back to something we said before, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Yudches Gazru over Yudches Nechlechu. We said that there were 18 Gzeiris that they made, and then in addition, there were 18 things on which they argued. So the Gemara asks about Tanya Hushu, but we have another Braisa that says there were 18 things that they agreed on. So the answer is, Vayvayim Nechlechu Lamacha Hushu. The answer is that what it means is the Nechlechu is on one day they argued about it, but then later on, Beth Hillel conceded to Beth Shammai that we have to have these 18 Gzeiris, and they became accepted. There's actually an interesting explanation, which is that Rambam gives over here in Pirush HaMishnayot, so it seems he had a slightly different Girsa in the Gemara over here, that there's actually three sets of 18 halachas. There's 18 halachas that everybody agreed on to begin with. That's the Hushbu, and the Rambam enumerates. You have the eight details of the dinim that we learned about in the first Mishnah of Amasechta, about the various cases where the Oni is Osher, or where the Oni is Chayev, where the Balabais is Chayev, or where both of them are Potter, etc. We said you have Shtayim Shein Arba Lefanim, or Shtayim Shein Arba Bachutz. So altogether you have eight cases over there. So those eight things, all of the Chachamim agreed on, says the Rambam. Then you have, in the second Mishnah, we had five things that you're not allowed to do Samoch L'Mincha, a half hour before Mincha Kana or Mincha Gerla, as we discussed over there. So that's another five. And then we had in the next Mishnah, we had five miscellaneous dinim, things that the tailor is not allowed to go out close to Shabbos with his needle, or the scribe with his pen. You're not allowed to do various things by candlelight. So altogether, the Rambam says that 18 things that all of the Chachamim at that time agreed on. Then in addition, you had the 18 Gzeiris, about dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, which we're in the middle of discussing now, which at first they disagreed on them, but Shammai held that you should be goyzer to them, but Hillel held that not. Eventually, everybody ended up agreeing that we do have to be goyzer to them, and they became very well accepted. Not only very well accepted, actually, you have a Yerushalmi that says that actually, in a way, like those are even stronger, these 18 things are stronger than most Gzeiris D'Rabbanan, because they went on Mesiras Nefesh on them, because like we discussed the other day, Beis Shammai actually forcibly prevented the more members from Beis Hillel from coming in, because they felt these Gzeiris need to be made, and they said, you people, the rest of you Talmidim, who want to come in, are not of the caliber to be deciding these things for the Jewish people. So like they went on Mesiras Nefesh on it, and therefore like so those 18 Gzeiris are even more accepted than regular Gzeiris D'Rabbanan. Like I think the Rashama uses an expression like even if any other Gzeira D'Rabbanan in principle a greater basin could overturn, but these not, because they went on the Siddur Nefesh for them. Anyway, so that's what you have again. You have 18, according to the Rambam's understanding of our Gemara, you have 18 halachas that everybody agreed on, namely the halachas in the first three Mishnayos of our Masechta. You have 18 which they argued on, namely the Yud Ches Dover that we're in the middle of discussing, the Gzeiris about the person who ate food that the Rishon Latroma, and a person who ate food that the Sheni Latroma, and a person who dipped in Mayim Shorvim, etc., all those things, the nine or ten that we discussed so far, and the other remaining nine that we're going to discuss later on, beginning on Sandak Kesayim. And then, in addition, on top of that, then you had 18 more halachas on which Bishama and Bishilo continued to argue, which are going to be in later on in our parak, beginning with the next Mishnah. We're going to have a bunch of dinim where Bishama says you're not allowed to do such and such before Shabbat, and Bishilo says you're allowed to, and those they continue to have among Amachloikas, and those as usual, the halachas like Bishilo. So according to the Rambam's understanding, according to the way we have it in front of us in the Gemara over here, is just that they had, that there was just one set of 18 halachas where they argued about them, and then in the end, Beis Hillel agreed to Beis Shammai that we do have to be goes with these things, whereas according to the Rambam's understanding, you actually have three sets of 18 halachas. One that they always agreed on, one that they first disagreed on and later on agreed to, and a third set that they continued to disagree on. Okay. Gufa, the Gemara says, now getting back to something else that we said before in the Gemara. We said, Amar Rav Begimul Mekoymus Nefleku Shammai VeHillel. There are three places where we find Shammai and Hillel themselves arguing. Now, we have Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue in hundreds of places in Shas, but Shammai and Hillel themselves, Rav Huna is telling us they argued in only three. And they are as follows. Number one is Shammai Omer Mikav Chala. Shammai says that you have to take chala from a calf of flour. The Hillel Omer Mikabayim. Hillel says you have to take from two calves. Now, what we do have to realize is that the cabin we're talking about over here are different in size than the cabin that you have in most places in China. You have the Mishnah over here that we're quoting over here is going to mention something about this, but we have like this. Most of the time in Shas, when we talk about measurements, we talk about a cabeza, a revius, a log, et cetera, usually we're talking about what's called midos midboriyos, which means the original measurements that existed when the Jewish people were in the desert, meaning when the Torah was given. So those measurements existed for a long time. At some point when the Jewish people were in Yerushalayim, so it could have been in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, could have been in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, I don't really know. In any case, they enlarged the measurements and created what they call Midas Yerushalmiyas. Meaning, so you have the measurements of the Midbar, and then you have the measurements of Yerushalayim. It could very well be. Now, and we learned in a couple of places. We learned in Menachos. We learned in Bechoris. We talked about the idea that we find that in the time of Yechezkel, which is during Golos Babel, they enlarged the coinage and made it 20% larger than it was before. So it could be around the same time they also enlarged the measurements in order to keep prices stable. Whatever it was, they increased the size of the measurements by 20%. So that created what they called Midas Yerushalmi. So now what it is like a shiur challah. We learn where do we learn what the size of a shiur challah is, how much flour you have to take challah from. We learn it for the pasuk is Reishis Arisei Sechem, the first of your dough. So we learn from that your dough means the size of dough that they would make in the midbar. In the midbar, we know each person got an omer of mun every day. An omer, the pasuk says over there, is 1/10 of an ephah. An ephah, if you calculate it, an ephah contains six saw, and a saw contains four calving, et cetera. So it comes out that an omer, 1/10 of an ephah, comes out to 1.8 calving of midas midbarius. A calf in midas midbarius consists of 24 beta, so therefore 1.8 times that comes out to 43.2 basin, and that is a shiur challah. So again, that's according to Midas Midborius, then it would be 1.8. Now, when they enlarge them and they created Midas Yerushalmius, which are 20% larger, then it goes from 1.8, it goes to another figure. So we have, so Shammai and Hillel are arguing over here. Shammai is saying one cab of Midas Yerushalmius, that is. Hillel is saying two cabim. Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi where exactly they're getting that, because they are calculating based on the omer that they had in the midbar, but they're calculating milagav or milabar. They're calculating various ways that you include, that you figure a percentage including the original amount or not including the original amount, and Shammai divides it in half because they had one for the morning, one for the evening. Whatever. Anyway, so Shammai says. So again, Shammai says one kav. Hillel says two kav. The chumim loyke divrezeh, the loyke divrezeh. The chum say not like either one of them. Ela kav umechta chayev b'chala. Rather, one kav and a half is chayev in chala. So now
I'm calling you back. I have a very bad connection. I cannot trying to make what you're saying. I'm calling you back.
Okay, so to continue. So Shammai had said that you take challah from one cab of flour. Hillel said two. And the Chachamim disagree and say you take from one cab and a half. One cab and a half, which again is in Midas Yerushalmi. In terms of Midas Midborios, the original measurements that existed when the Torah was given, it would be 1.8 cabin. But because now each cab is 20% larger, then instead of 1.8 cabin, it comes out to 1.5, 1.5 cabin, say the Chacham. So that's the first machlokas of Shammai and Hillel. That's the first machlokas where Shammai and Hillel themselves ordered. Then the Mishnah continued, Mishi Dilu Amidos. Eventually there came a point when they made the measurements even larger, and they created what are called Midas Tziporius, which are, because Sipori is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael, that was one of the centers of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael in the couple of hundred years after the Churban. So then they again increased the measurements by 20%. So now you went down. Now you went from 1.5 cabin. Now again, you have larger cabin. So now it becomes a smaller number of cabin. Omru chameshes ruvoyim kemach chayavim b'chala. So then the Chachamim said, based on the figure that we have from the times of Shammai and Hillel, where again the Chachamim had said, not like Shammai and not like Hillel, but the amount of a cab and a half, that's a cab and a half of Yerushalmi cabin. Now when it comes to Sukkoti cabin, it's 1.25, 5 quarters, so meaning 1.25. Rabbi Yossi Emehe, Turin Heva Oid Chayavim. Rabbi Yossi says a little bit differently. Exactly 5 would still be Potter, only a little bit over 5 would be Chayav. Rashi says because Rabbi Yossi holds that the eggs in the times of the Midbar were slightly larger than the ones in the times of Rabbi Yossi, therefore you have to compensate for that. Tosfos says because Rabbi Yossi holds that after you take out the challah, you have to have the amount of flour that they had in the Midbar, the amount of mum that they had in the Midbar. Either way, the point is, that's the first machlokes of Shammai and Hillel, where, again, where, and by the way, in this and also in the other two machlokes, and it's interesting, all these three machlokes in Shammai and Hillel, in all of them, the other Chachamim disagree with both of them, and in none of them is the halacha like Shammai or like Hillel. The halacha in each of these three cases is like the other Chachamim. So it is here with challah, where, again, according to Shammai, it would have been 1 Yerushalmi kav, and according to Hillel, it would be 2 Yerushalmi Kavim. And the Chum are saying that, no, it's 1.5 Yerushalmi Kavim. Okay. So that's their first machlokes. The Idach, the second machlokes of Shammai and Hillel, is like this. Hillel oimim meloi hin maim shu'urim poswanus hamikra. Hillel says that a full tin of drawn water passes a mikra. So we know that we have the halacha that if a mikra does not have 40 saw in it, and then you have drawn water, water that was drawn in a keli or whatever, falls into that mikra, then it makes it possible. So the question is, how much water does that have to be? So Hillel says it has to be a hin, which is 12 logim. Now, why does he use that expression? Shechayv adam loyma b'loshin rabbi. A person is obligated to speak in the language of his rebbe. Meaning, the Rashi says like this. In general, in the Mishnah, we don't use the word hin. The word hin for a measurement is something that we find in Chumash. We find Revi'is Ahin, Shlishis Ahin, whatever. We find a hin for the Shemana Mishcha. We don't find the measurement hin being used in the times of the Mishnah. So why is Hillel using the expression Meloi Hin? Why doesn't it say 12 logim? Because this is how we learned it from his Rebbeim, Shmaya and Apayim. And therefore he followed in their Loshin. Rashi brings a second explanation from his Rebbeim that Chayav Adam Loimu B'Loshin Rabbe means that a person should follow the language of his Rebbe, meaning the Rebbe of all of us, Moshe Rabbeinu. But Rashi doesn't like that explanation. I mean, throughout Shas, we have many places where we use terminology and whatever that's not from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. So why should this be any different? But okay, so Rashi says that what it is that Hillel learned from his Rebbeim with the expression Meloi Hin, and therefore he followed that expression. The Rambam explains it an interesting idea like this. We know that Shmaya and Aptalion were Gerim. We know that even nowadays you have Gerim, because they grew up speaking some other language, not Lashon Kodesh, they have a very hard time, we find it with Gerim, we find it many times with Baalei Teshuva, they have a hard time getting their tongues around some of the sounds of Lashon Kodesh. So that's how it was with Shmaya and Aptalion, says the Rambam. They weren't able to pronounce a hey the way that we pronounce it. So instead, they would say, instead of saying yin, they would say in or ain mayim shorvin. And that could be misleading, because then it would sound like it means ain, it does not, that mayim shorvin does not possible mitzvah. Therefore, they would add the word maloi, and they would say maloi in mayim shorvin, and that way they would make it clear that they don't mean not, they mean a measurement, the hin. And so Hillel followed suit and used the same expression, even though he was perfectly able to pronounce a hey because he was a born yin. Mm-hmm. So that's the second explanation of what it means, that's why he's saying the Lashon Rabbe, why he's using the word hin. Dodos HaRishonim has a very interesting explanation about it, actually. He says that we're not talking about what Hillel learned from Shmaya and Aptalion at all. Hillel grew up in Babel, so he learned from his Rebbeim in Babel at first. Now, in Babel, they had their own measurements. They didn't necessarily use the same measurements as they did in Eretz Yisrael. So the Chachamim there didn't want to use their local measurements when they're teaching halachos like this, because then if a person moves someplace else, they're not going to know how to translate it into the local measurements. So they use the word yin, which is something that you find in the Torah, 12 logim, and that way everybody would be clear on what it means. So therefore, Hillel, even after he moved to Eretz Yisrael, continued to use the expression that he learned from his Rebbeim in Babel. Okay, anyway, that's Hillel's opinion. Shammai in the Tisha Kabin. Shammai says the amount of drawn water that passes a mikveh is 9 kabin, which is much less, because a hin would be 12 lug. Actually, not much less, really. Actually, there are 4 lugim to a kab. So actually, it comes out then, it's not a great deal of difference. Then, according to Hillel, 12 lugim, which would be 12 lugim, which would be 3 kabim. Okay, actually, yeah, Shammai is then much more maple. Shammai is saying 9 kabim, which is 3 times as much. Okay, the Chum said not like either one of them. Ad Shabo Bez Gaudi and Mishar HaAshbab Shibashlaim, until eventually what happened was 2 weavers came from Shar HaAshbab in Yerushalayim. So these were two weavers. They worked for a living as weavers, but they were Shamanah Chachamim. They learned by Shmai and Atalian, and they testified. They gave testimony in Shmai and Atalian's name to Shloisha Lugin Mayim Shuvim Parisan of Mikra, that 3 Lugin of Mayim Shuvim are enough to pass on Mikra. The Kimu Chachamim, that's the Debrayim, and the Chachamim established and accepted what they said, that is the correct halacha. So not like Hillel, who had said 12 lugim, not like Shammai, who had said 9 kabim, which would be 36 lugim, but rather only 3 lugim.
So we believe this guy weavers that came as Talmid Chacham over Hillel and Shammai, who were Hillel and Shammai.
Yes, and in fact, Rashi brings over here from the Sefta Adius, from Sefta and the Sefta Adius. Why does it mention them? Why does it mention that they're weavers from Shara Ashkos? Because you see, in other words, you see the importance of constantly being in the Beis Medrash. A weaver is a very, very low down, degraded kind of work. In fact, the halacha is, for example, that if a person ever worked as a weaver, they're possible to be a kohen gadol, or they're possible to be a king, because nobody's ever going to respect them. Shara Ashbos is like the lowest class area in Yerushalayim, and still what they said that won out over what Hillel and Shammai said. Yeah, because they
on the basis of what?
On the basis of that they said that this is what Shmaya and Apalian taught. So either what it means is if we
there's
if
two
we
people,
say
with two witnesses against one.
Well, there's that maybe, but also maybe for 2 of them, I don't know. But whatever it is, it could be also from the Mephoshim explained. One possibility is, even though if we say that Hillel himself is quoting his Rebbeim in Babel, like Zoros HaRishonim says, okay, so the Chachamim is saying, very nice, we respect your Chachamim in Babel, but nevertheless, what Shmaya and Apalian, the Nasi and the Av Beis Din said counts more for us. As far as Shammai doesn't say in whose name he's saying, whether he's saying in the name of Shmaya and Apalian or his own Svara, if we say that Hillel and Shammai are also quoting from Shmaya and Apalian, okay, then the Chachamim said, based on what these Gaudim, based on what these weavers are saying, apparently Shmaya and Apalian eventually changed their mind. So therefore, so that became the accepted halacha. Okay. So that's the second machlokas of Shammai and Hillel.
When did Shmaya and Apalian live relative to Hillel and Shammai?
Shmaya and Apalian lived in the middle of the time of the second Beit Mikdash. So we have, the Gemara is going to mention soon, we know we have 5 Zugos. We know in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, we have like this, right? We have Shimon HaTzadik, was the end of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. He's at the very beginning of the second Beit Mikdash. After him, you had his Talmud, you had Antigonus Ish-Sochoi. After that, you have the 5 generations of Zugos, Yosef ben Yehazar and Yosef ben Yochanan, and Yeshua ben Prachi and Nitai HaOdeli, and so forth. And you have those, so you have the 5 of them. And then the last of them is Hillel and Shammai. And the Gemara is going to tell us soon that Hillel became Nasi 100 years before the Churban. So Shmai and Apalian, a generation before that, so like 150 maybe or so years before the Churban by chain. Anyway, so far we have 2 machlokas in Shammai and Hillel. Again, each one, the Chachamim disagree with them, and the halacha is like the Chachamim. One as far as the Shiur Chala, and one as far as the amount of drawn water that passes the mikveh. The Idach, and then the third one is like this. We learned this in the Sechta Nida. Shammai Omer Kol Anoshim Dayan Shaitan. Shammai says that all women, when they see a Re'iyah, it's enough to make them tame and to make them that any taris that they touched are tame only from when they actually saw the re'iyah and onward. As we learned at the beginning of Nida, the Shammai is not concerned about the fact that it may have started earlier. So they say Shammai himself rather says that we only have to worry about from when she actually saw the re'iyah. The Hillel Omer Pekidah Lepekidah V'Afilu Yom Habe. Hillel says Hillel is machmir over Shammai over here, and says that no, you have to go back to the last bedikah that she did. So whenever she did the last bedikah, from then on, we have to say that there's a suffix on any taris that she touched, because the re'iyah may have begun even after that, and just was held inside, if it didn't flow out. Even if it was many days ago, the last bedikah. The Chum said not like either one of them, but Shammai is too mekel, Hillel is too machmer. So the Chum said not like either one. Rather, what they say is, from within a 24-hour period, that reduces the amount from one bedikah to the next, meaning that if her last bedikah was more than 24 hours ago, we're not metame her and her taharis misafik from more than 24 hours back. And then the time from one bedikah to the next reduces the time from the 24 hours, meaning that if she did a bedikah within the 24 hours, then the suffix only begins as of the last bedikah. So in other words, 24 hours or the last bedikah, whichever is less. Again, as opposed to Shammai, who says that there's no matter of bedikas at all, there's no matter of mes last or bedikah at all, you always just go from the time of the re'iyah, and as opposed to Hillel, who says you go back to the last bedikah, even if it was many days ago. Okay, so those are the three machlokes of Shammai and Hillel themselves. So the Gemara asks, the two leka, you're telling me there's no other machlokes of Shammai and Hillel? V'ha'ika Hillel omer lismich, Shammai omer shelo lismich. What about, we find in the Masechta Chagiga, a machlokes between Shammai and Hillel, about if you're bringing a korban on Yom Tov, do you do smicha on it? Do you do smicha on it? The Gemara discusses over there the question, because you have a zera d'rabbanon that you're not allowed to use an animal on Yom Tov. Smicha involves you using on it because you're leaning on the animal b'chol koichai. So therefore, Shammai holds that you shouldn't do smicha on Yom Tov, and Hillel holds that you should. So there's a fourth machlokes of theirs. The answer is Tika Amar Rav Huna, Hecha Deleka Plukta Dirab Vosa Bahadayu. Yes, but Rav Huna is only talking about machlokasin that Shammai and Hillel themselves had, where their rebbeim before them did not have these machlokas. Here you have, this machlokas about smicha goes back many generations. You have the Mishnah and Chagigah over there list that it goes back all the way to Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yechon on the first pair of Zugas, that already they had this machlokas. And then in the next generation after them, Yeshua ben Prachi and Nitzah HaBeili had the same machlokas, and the next generation after them. So this is not a new machlokas of Shammai and Hillel. This is a machlokas that already existed for a long time before them, for four generations before them, and Hillel and Shammai just continued with it. As opposed to Rav Huna, it's talking about three machlokes that only Shammai and Hillel themselves had, where their rebbeim before them did not. Okay. What about, the Gemara says, Va'ikah boitzel l'gas? What about another one? We have a case that we're going to discuss later on Daf Yud Zayin, where a person is harvesting grapes, intending to press them for wine. So Shammai says automatically the grapes are considered mukhshar l'kabel truma, even if we don't particularly know that any liquid fell on them, or even if we don't know that it fell on them l'rotzon. Nevertheless, Shammai holds, as we're going to learn later on Daf Yud Zayin, that the grapes are still mukhshar l'kabel truma. And Hillel says that there's not mukhshar l'kabel truma. So there you have a fifth machloek. So there you have another machloek that's there. And that's something only between them. You don't find that their rebbeim had that machloek. This is the Gemara says, Bamine Dahi. Never mind that machloek. It's the Hoffman, Kashotik, the Hillel Shammai. Because in that case, Hillel ended up being quiet and conceding to Shammai, as we're going to discuss later on Daf Yud Zayin, that Hillel ended up agreeing with Shammai that we do have to make the Gzeira, the Rabbanon, that those grapes are considered Mukhshal Kabbal Shoma regardless.
If so what? When are they considered?
We have to consider those grapes, mukhshar l'kabel truma, regardless, even though we don't know that they actually got wet with one of the shiva mashkin, for reasons that we'll discuss later on Daf Yud Zayin. So Rav Huna is not counting that as one of their machlokes in, because even though originally they argued about it, later on Hillel ended up agreeing with Shammai, as we're going to learn Daf Yud Zayin, that he ended up agreeing that we do have to make that greater. So therefore, we can't count it as an ongoing machlokes of theirs. We're only counting the ones where they had a machlokes until the halacha was decided by the other chachamim. Okay. Next, we learned on Daf Yud Dalet. We learned yesterday. Yosef ben Yezir stirred over Yosef ben Yechon and Ishur Yerushalayim gozru truma al eretz ha'am v'al kleitz chutzis. We said that again. Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yechon, who are the first of the five heirs of Zogaz in Perkei Avos. So that we said that they made a gzera. We said that they made a gzera about Eretz Amim, about the lands outside Eretz Yisrael, that that Midrabanan was saying that those places are considered tamei, and we said about place chokis. We said they also made a gzera that glass kalim are able to be metabol tuma. We're midraraisa or not. So the question is, the Gemara asks, what do you mean that Yosi ben Yehezer and Yosi ben Yochanan? We mentioned that incidentally because we quoted a brisa that mentioned three takonos. In different generations among the Zugos, and the last one we had mentioned was Shammai and Hillel had made a Zera about your dying, and we asked what did we mean if it was doing the Yudchas Dover, which was later, and we said that Shammai and Hillel had made a Zera about your dying and it wasn't accepted, and later on their Talmudim made that same Zera and it was accepted. But now we're getting back to discussing this matter of Yosi ben Ezra and Yosi ben Yosef. So the question is, the Gemara asks, what do you mean that they're the ones who made the Zera about, who made these Zeras about Eretz Ta'amim and about Klei Chofis? We know that those takonis, were made by the Chachamim 80 years before the Churban, which, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, 80 years before the Churban is a long time after Yosef ben Yehezer and Yosef ben Yehezer's time. And how do we know that? The Omer Rav Kahana said like this: when Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi became sick, and I guess the Chachamim figured he's soon going to pass away, they sent him a message, Rebbe, Emer Lonu Beis V'Gimel Dvarim Sha'amarta Lonu Mishum Avicha. Please tell us two or three things that you previously told us in your father's name. Or actually, Agoris Habach takes out the word Lonu, because in other words, the point is he hadn't told them before, and now they want to have a chance to learn these things before he passes away. So these are
what did they? What did they last? Did they wait until the last minute? I mean, isn't that egregious a bit?
Maybe, I don't know, but the point is, I mean, like this, they learned many things of Torah from him.
No, I understand.
Okay, but fine. In particular now, they realize this might be their last chance. I think it's actually the Tosfos, someplace else, that says that this happened a number of different times. We find actually in different places, different things that he responded with. So apparently this happened more than once. So each time he was not feeling well, they asked him to tell him something because they might not have a chance in the future. And by the way, these things that we're going to learn now are not really things in halacha so much. These are more things in Jewish history. So things in halacha they learned from him a long time before. But Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi's father is Rabbi Yosi ben Chalakta. He's the one who wrote a collection of brises called Seder Olam, which is our main source from the times of the Tanoim for a lot of details on Jewish history. But therefore, so they were asking him to tell them some details from Sefer Olam that otherwise they hadn't heard before. Okay. Sholach Lahem. So he sent them a message as follows. Okay, I'll tell you some things that my father said in this connection. Number one, Kachom Abba. This is what my father said. First of all, Kuf Pei Shana Ad Shalei Chorav Habayis, 180 years before the destruction of the second Beit Mikdash, Poshta Malchus HaRasha Al Yisrael, is when the wicked government, meaning the Romans, started dominating the Jewish people. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains that actually what happened was when the Hashmonaim took over in Eretz Yisrael, when they kicked out the Greeks and took over, that was 26 years earlier. They did that with the help of the Romans. At that point, though, the deal was that the Romans and the Jews are going to be equal partners in ruling over Eretz Yisrael. The way the Gemara phrases it over there is like the Romans are saying, if we're going to appoint the governors, then you're going to get to appoint the sub-governors and vice versa. So like we're going to be equal in that. And then the Gemara says, after 26 years, the Romans started breaking their end of the deal and started dominating Eretz Yisrael more. So that was 180 years before the Korban. Number two, Pei Shana Ad Shalei Chorav Habayis. The second statement is 80 years before the Korban, so 100 years after the Romans had taken over. The Chachamim of that time, 80 years before the Churban, made a Zera about Eretz Amin, that Eretz Amin is Tomei, that the lands outside of Yisrael are Tomei. So a person goes there, then you can be sprinkled with Korah. Druma water, Truma that goes there becomes Tomei, etc. And the reason behind this, we touched on before, is because the Goyim in those days were just very, they're dead, and especially their miscarriages and whatever, wherever they wanted, and they wouldn't necessarily mark them. So therefore, you have a problem anywhere in Chutzlaris could be coming. So they made a Gzeira on Eretz Amim, Val Kleiz Chochis, and also about glass kalim, that they're able to be in a Kabbal Truma. And the third statement is Mem Shonab, Shalei Chorav Habayis, 40 years before the Churban, go to La Sanhedrin, the Yoshua La Bachanuyas. The Sanhedrin moved, went into Golos from the Lushkat HaGozis, from their office in the Mishnah, where they'd been up until that point, and they moved to Chanuyas, which is an area in the Harabai. So it's my actual, my Hilchsa. What's the relevance in Halacha of that last thing? Why is it important for us to know that? Why is it important for us to know where the Sanhedrin was sitting at any given time? That tells us that from then on, when the Sanhedrin moved from the Lishkas HaGozis, from then on they were not judging cases of Knossos anymore. Knossos meaning all the cases where the Torah tells us that, for example, the Torah tells us, let's say, that there are certain cases where a person has to pay a fixed amount. For example, let's say you have an ox gores a person's eved Knani, that is, and kills him. You have to pay thirty sloyim, whether no matter how much the eved is worth. That's an example of a knas, times where the Torah tells us that a person has to pay more or less than the actual amount of the damages. For example, tashlumei kefil, tashlumei avav hamisha. All those things are called dinei knasos. So the Gemara says dinei knasos. What do you mean? Dinei knasos have nothing to do with whether the Sanhedrin is sitting in the lishkas hagazis. Dinei knasos have to do with whether you have people who have smicha ish makiyish. And they still had that for a few hundred years after the Churban. They certainly had it still 40 years before the Churban. So what do you mean they stopped doing dinei knasos after they moved from the lishkas hagazis? You're right. The Gemara says ela ema shloi donar dinei nefoshes. You're right. You have to change the words. Not that they stopped dinei knasos, but they stopped dinei nefoshes. Because they can only judge dinei nefoshes only when the Sanhedrin is sitting in the lishkas hagazis. The expression the Gemara has about it in other places, Tosfos quotes it over here, Melamed Sham Mokum Godin. From the way the Pasuk phrases it, we learn that the place is what causes that they're able to judge Dinei Nefoshes. So therefore, if they're not in their place in the Lishkas HaGozis, then they can't judge Dinei Nefoshes anymore. Tosfos over here actually asks on the face of it, that only applies to the Zakid Mamre. How do we know it applies to other cases as well? Tosfos in other places explains that once we learn it by Zakid Mamre, then we learn that it applies everywhere. It applies to all other Mishnas based in as well. And it also applies to all Sanhedrin. When the Sanhedrin of 71 is in the Lushkas HaGozis, then Sanhedrin anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, and even in Chutzlar, for that matter, if they have smicha that was given to them in Eretz Yisrael, are allowed to judge Dinei Nefoshes. But once the Sanhedrin moves from Lushkas HaGozis, then nobody else is allowed to. They or anybody else are not allowed to.
So what was the reason why they moved? Who told them to move from that?
The Gemara mentions elsewhere, is because at that time there was starting to be a lot of murder. And therefore, they couldn't possibly judge all of them. First of all, we know that in general, the Sanhedrin is not supposed to put a person to death unless they really have, the famous expression in Machlis is that if they do it even once in 7 years, then they're considered a destructive based in. But second of all, you also have, at this point, you had many of these murderers are people, they're politically connected and whatever, and therefore the Sanhedrin wasn't able to do anything with them. So therefore, they realized there's no choice, we have to move from Lushkas HaGozis, at least this way, we're not going to be held responsible, that we're not judging them and executing them, because the fact of the matter is, we can't, because we're not able to save them. That was the reason why they moved. You have a Tosfos, I think, or somebody who says that maybe on rare occasions they would still move back to the Lushkas HaGozis when there was a special occasion when they needed to. But in general, for those 40 years, they were located in Chanuyos and then later on in Yerushalayim proper, etc. You also have, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Yuma that during those 40 years is when they started seeing things that are indicating that the Korban is coming close. They started seeing at that point that the red string on Yom Kippur is not turning white, and the girdle for Lashem is not coming up in the Kohen Gadol's right hand anymore, and the doors of the Heichal are opening on their own. So they already realize that something. They already realize that something is coming.
That 40 years to do tshuva, they didn't catch.
And 40 years to do tshuva, and I guess we still had. Unfortunately, people still kept up with Sinas Chinam during those 40 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so the point is, we see from the Bishmah of Rabbi Yossi's second statement that it was the Chachamim 80 years before the Churban that made the Gzeiros about Eretz Amim and about Klei Tzuchus. So what are you telling me, Yossi ben Ye'ezer and Yossi ben Yochanan did that? The Chitema B'Pei Shana Nami Ihu Havu. So you're going to say, okay, very simple. Yossi ben Ye'ezer and Yossi ben Yochanan were living 80 years before the Churban. Can't. That doesn't work. V'Hatanya, because we learn in a Braita, Hillel v'Shimon, Gamliel v'Shimon, Nogan v'Si'usan, L'fnei Abayit, Me'ashana. Hillel, and then his son Shimon, and his son Gamliel, which is Rav Gamliel HaZaken, and his son Shimon, which is the first of Shimon Gamliel, all four of them together had their nasius for 100 years before the Churban, meaning that Hillel was appointed as Nasi 100 years before the Churban, and after he passed away, his son Shimon took over, and after he passed away, his son Gamliel took over, etc., and that took up the last 100 years before the Churban. The Ilu Yosef and Yezir is third of Yosef and Yochanan have a Kadmi Tova. Now Yosef and Yezir and Yosef and Yochanan are much earlier because they're four generations earlier in Pirkei Avos. So in other words, who is Nasi at the time 80 years before the Churban? Hillel, or maybe by that point Shimon. There's a point that Hillel became Nasi 100 years before the Churban. So either he or one of his descendants is Nasi at the point 80 years before the Churban. Yosef and Yezir and Yosef and Yochanan are four generations earlier. So they're much earlier. They weren't around 80 years before the Churban. By the way, the Shimon that we're mentioning over here, the Shimon, the son of Hillel, this seems to be the only place in all of Shas where he's mentioned. You don't find, of Hillel, of course, we know a lot. Of Rav Gamliel HaZaken, we know a lot. Of Rav Shimon Gamliel, the first Rav Shimon Gamliel, we don't know as much, but we know something. According to most opinions, he's one of the Asod HaRogei Malchus. But of Shimon, the son of Hillel over here, we really don't know anything. So apparently, he must have been Nasi for a very short time. But whatever the case, anyway, the point is that, again, so how are you telling me that Yosef and Yezir and Yosef and Yochanan made these gzeiros when we see that the Chachamim of Hillel's time, 80 years before the Churban, are the ones who made those gzeiros? Ella, no. The answer is like this. Also in it was a two-stage thing. Yosef and Yezir and Yosef and Yochanan originally came, they made the original gzeira on Eretz Ha'am. They also in Gozer, they made the gzeira like this. Agusha Lisraif. That if Truma touches a chunk of dirt from Eretz Ha'amim, then you have to burn that Truma, because in that chunk there might be a piece of a dead body or something. The Azira, but if Truma was just taken into the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, the Loi Klum, then the Chachamim did not, then Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yochanan did not make any Gzeira that anything should happen to that Truma. So how does it come into the Azira without touching the dirt? So Rashi says, let's say, for example, you have a box which is open on the bottom, and somebody carried in Truma into Eretz Ha'amim in such a box. So obviously, in other words, part of the box is closed in, so the Truma doesn't fall out, but the rest of it, let's say, is open. So it's in the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, but it didn't actually touch the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim, and the person carrying it didn't necessarily either. So therefore, so Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yochanan didn't make any gzeira about that. They still said that the Truma remains tahor and you can eat it. But also, Rabbanan, the Pei Shana, later on, the Chachamim, 80 years before the Churban, which is now, as we're saying, 100 or 150 or 200 or whatever years, after Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yochanan, Gozer, Avira Litzlois, they made a new gzeira that if Truma goes into the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, even though it didn't touch the ground there, nevertheless, you still toil it, you have to suspend it, you can't burn it, because not necessarily Tomei, but you don't eat it either.
One second. What's the logic here? The air keeps moving around the earth. It goes from continent to continent. So the air
when we say the air of Eretz Ha'amim, I mean, listen, you know, Alpi Kabbalah, the Alpi Kabbalah mentions it in Tanya, is the idea is that the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim is full of clippers. But in terms of halacha, the idea is we know that a kever is metame, among other things, but oihel, if you're above or below the kever, or if you're under a roof or whatever together with the kever. So in Yosef and Yezir and Yosef and Yochanan's time, they didn't feel the need to extend the gzeira to that. For one thing, you have an opinion actually that kvorim of goyim are not metame but oihel. Anyway, later on, the chachamim of a later period decided that we need to be gozer on the air space of it as well. We don't mean the air as in the molecules of air. We mean the air space. In other words, if you have truma was brought into the air space of Eretz Ha'amim, even if it's in a vacuum-packed container, because there's no actual air there. But the point is, it's in the air space of Eretz Ha'amim, conceivably there could be a caver in the ground underneath it, then fine, we're not going to burn that truma, but we are going to be toiler that truma. We're going to put that truma in a suspended state.
Well, that's an important clarification, because initially you mentioned the air, now it's the air space.
What we mean is the air space, yes.
Okay.
So that's the thing. So there were two stages in the Gzeira. Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yochanan made the Gzeira as far as when it touches the actual dirt there. The later Chachamim, 80 years before the Churban, made it when it's in the air space of it. Now, Tosfos points out the Gemara hasn't given an answer as far as the Klei Zchuchit. You have the same problem as far as the glass kalim. That's where you said that Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yechonon made the Gzeira on it, and later on was saying the Chachamim 80 years before the Churban made it. The Tosfos discusses that actually what it made, the Gemara, the next sugya, after we finish this one, the next at the bottom of this Amud, we're going to talk about the Zinim of glass kalim. The one thing may have been the same kind of thing, that originally they made it, you can't say that originally they made to be Tola and later on they made to be Soda, because even in the end, we're only Tola. The Tosfos discusses that there may be a difference whether it touches the inside versus the outside of the Kali. We're going to discuss that in the next sugya. And then Tosfos brings another Girsa that when it comes to both things, both Eretz Amin and Klei Zchuchit, that Yossi and Yossi made the Takana. But again, as we said yesterday about Hillel and Shammai with Yadayim, people did not accept that Zera, and since it wasn't accepted, it never went into effect. And later on, at a later point, that Rabbanan, 80 years before the Churban, made these Zeras again, and they were accepted. So according to that Girsa, then that's what it is. With both Eretz Amin and the Klei Zchuchit, we don't have to say that they made a partial takana, but rather they made the full takana, but it wasn't accepted, and therefore it didn't become a takana. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Remember the Chodok Zera Sahave L'Sreifa?" So you're telling me that when they originally made the Zera about Eretz Amin, that if truma touches Eretz Amin, that it's going to become tome, and you're going to have to burn it. You're telling me that the original Zera was just that they're going to have to burn it? But we find that Ilfa said, we learned before, Yadayim Tchilas Gzeiras HaMasreifa. We said that when it came to the Gzeira of Yadayim, that if a person's hands without washing touch Truma, then you have to burn the Truma. Now there we focused on Tchilas Gzeiras. We said that the point was that the Gzeira to begin with was that if Yadayim touched Truma, you have to burn it. And we asked on that, then how it is that there was a Gzeira over there, how is it that there was a Zera also on your dying, a boy Machla Sefer? But the point is, there we were focusing on the fact that we said that the Zera of your dying was originally to burn, but now we're focusing that Ilfa chose his words very carefully. When he said your dying chilas zeros in the Sefer, means your dying would chilas zeros in the Sefer, that Ilfa is being specific. Only when it comes to the trauma of your dying are we saying that the original Zera, when they first made the Zera, was that you should burn trauma that touches it. Implying that other kinds of Zeras, where the Chachamim said that something touches Truma and you have to burn Truma, it wasn't that originally they made the Zera to burn the Truma. Originally they made the Zera only to be toilet. Later Chachamim came up with the Zera to burn it. So what are you telling me that Yosef and Yezer and Yosef and Yochanan made a Zera to begin with, that if Truma touches dirt from Eretz Amin, that you have to burn it? That doesn't fit with what Ilfa is saying, that that's true only of your Yadayim, but not of other Zera. Now, Ela to know, we have to reconstruct what happened was like this. Also, Inu Gozer Agusha Lithlois Fa'avir of Loikum. What it is like this. Yosi and Yosi, when they made their original Zera, it was that if Truma touches a piece of dirt from Eretz Amin, you don't burn it. You only toilet it. You put it in a suspended state, and you wait and see what happens. Either eventually it spoils, or eventually it becomes tome with some kind of definite tumor, or it's chomet and you burn it erev Pesach. So not like we said before, they made the Gzeira to burn it, but just they made the Gzeira to be toilet. Meanwhile, they also made the Gzeira, they didn't make a Gzeira about Aver. They said if tumor just goes into Eretz Amin without actually touching the dirt over there, then nothing happens there. But also, Rabbanan, the patient of Gozer, Agusha, Litzroit, Ba'avir, Litzroit. Then the Rabbanon, 80 years before the Churban, upgraded both of those things. They said this, that Yosi and Yosi made a Gzera about the Gush, that we're only going to be toilet. We're going to be machmer on that and say not only that you're toilet, but that you actually burn the Turma that touched the dirt from Eretz Amin. And then Yosi and Yosi did not find the need to make the Gzera on the airspace, that is, of Eretz Amin. We're going to make a Gzera on it, that you're going to be toilet Truma that goes into Eretz Amin even without touching the dirt.
Okay. Toilet means what? They're going to place it aside?
It means we're not allowed to eat that Truma, but we're not allowed to burn it either. We have to wait and see what develops with it. Either eventually it becomes Tomei with a definite Truma and then we burn it, or eventually it spoils and then we burn it, or it's Chometz and Eretz Pesach comes and we burn it. That's litmus. So one of those. So according to the way the Gemara is saying now, you had both Yosef ben Ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan and the Rabbanon of Peishon, of 80 years before the Korban, are both involved in the Zera of Eretz Amin. But Yosef ben Ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, their Zera was that when it comes to touching the dirt of it, you're only Torah, and that's it. That was their whole Zera. The Rabbanon, a few generations later, said that, no, what we're going to say is this, that Yosef ben Ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan said you should be Tola. Instead, we're going to say you have to burn Truma that touches this dirt from Eretz Amin, and we're also going to make a Gzera on the airspace of Eretz Amin, which they hadn't made a Gzera. Okay. The Gemara asked about Akasi Ba'usha Gozer. Still, what do you mean that this Takana about Eretz Amin, that you have to burn Truma, that you have to burn Truma when it touched dirt that came from Eretz Amin, but Usha Gozer, that Gzera was made only in Usha, only in the Sanhedrin was in Usha, which is sometime, which is a few decades after the Korban. So long after 80 years before the Korban, over 100 years later. It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah, Al-Gov Sekeh Sofenef HaTrumah, there are six cases of Sofet for which we burn Trumah, meaning usually the rule is when we have a Sofet where the Trumah became Tomei, then as we just said, we're Toilet. We don't eat it, because it might be Tomei, but we don't burn it because it might not be Tomei, and the Torah tells us that you have to guard Truma and prevent it from being damaged or burnt or whatever if you're able to eat it. So like this, most cases of Sofek were Torah, but we say there are six cases where even though the Truma is only because of a Sofek, we still burn Truma, Midrabanan, and they are as follows. Number one, our Sofek Beis Akras. Number one, we're a Sofek because of a Beis Akras. Now, Beis Akras, Rashi explains over here, means a field where we know at one point there was a caver in there, and now we lost track where in that field the caver is. So now, you have a suffix. Truma was brought into that area. Was it over the caver? If it was, then it became tummy. Was it not over the caver? Then in that case, it didn't become tummy. That is a case where even though the truma is only a suffix, we still go and burn the truma. That's Rashi. Tosfos says that's not what Beis HaPras means. Beis HaPras here, as in most places in Shas, means a field where we know there was a grave there and we know where the grave was, but then somebody plowed up the field. So Midaraisa, we would say that the field is not Tomei. So Midaraisa, we would say that the field is not Tomei because either you have different Rishonim talk about, either because the plow is not likely to have gone that deep enough to actually break up the bones in the cave, therefore there's no problem, or according to other Rishonim, according to the Rashba and other Rishonim the other way around, that we assume the bones were broken up into such tiny pieces that they're not Metame anymore, but Midrabanan we say a Beis HaPras is Tomei. Midrabanan we say 100 amas in each direction from the grave is Tomei. So that's the first of six cases. So if Truma was brought into such an area, then we burn it even though it's only a suffix. That's case number one. Number two, our suffix offer Abama Eretz Amim, because of dirt that came from Eretz Amim, where again, any dirt that came from Eretz Amim, from Chutzlars, we have a suffix on it that it might be Tomei, because there might be human remains mixed in with it. So again, that's a case when we say that we burn Truma that touched that dirt, even though it's only a suffix. Number three, Val Suffolk Digde Amaharat. Number three, where you have a suffix that's because of the clothes of an Amaharat, where we always have a concern that an Amaharat's wife might have sat on his clothes while she was a nidah, and therefore that his clothes are Tomei. Or Tosfos learns a little differently that we make a Gzera, that the Amaharat's are considered like Zavim. So their own saliva is Tomei much, and certainly their clothes. Whatever it is, again, so Truma touches the clothes of an Amaharat, so we burn it, even though it's only a suffix. Number four of our suffix Kalim and Insayim, where you find a Kali and you don't know whether the Kali is Tomei or Tahar. So you have rules about that. In most cases, we say that those Kalim are Tomei and suffix. So again, if Truma touches those Kalim, then we burn it. Number five, Val Suffolk Harukin. Number five is a suffix involving saliva. You find saliva on the streets or something, you always have a suffix, whether it might be saliva from a Zav or any of the other people whose saliva is Matame, as we've learned before. So therefore, again, if Truma then touches that saliva, then we burn it, even though it's only a suffix. And number six, Val Suffolk, May Ragle Adam, Shekineged May Ragle Behema. a suffix of human urine where it's corresponding to suffix of to urine of an animal. Meaning, Rashi learns like this. It means here we actually have a spesa. We have a container in front of us full of urine. We don't know whether that urine came from a person, which if it was, then it might be from a zov or what have you, and in that case, a zov urine is an avatova. Or it might be from a person who is a zov. It might be from a person who is not a zov. It might not even be from a person at all. It might even be from an animal. And then, of course, the urine of an animal is not metame at all. So you have two sphakas. And nevertheless, we still consider it tame misafik, and we still burn truma because of it. Tosfos has a different explanation that what it means is that it's not a double suffix. Tosfos says if it was a double suffix and it was a sphakas, you wouldn't burn truma because of it. So Tosfos learns what we mean is, let's say you have two containers of urine in front of you. One of them you know is from an animal, and the other one you're not sure about. So given that you're not sure about it, so you would say, so on the one hand, it might also be from an animal, but maybe not, because the human urine and animal urine look a lot different. So therefore, so there's more reason to say that there's only one suffix. We can assume that that other container contains human urine, and now you only have the suffix whether it came from a zov or a nidr or what have you. Anyway, the point is that those are the six phases. And Mishnah continues, Al vaday magon, al sofik tumos, and sofin et truma. So when you know that truma touched any one of these six things, even though with each one of them you only have a suffix whether the thing is tummy or not, because for example, in the first case, the base of craft, you don't know for sure that the truma was over the area where the caver was, or according to Tosfos that the bones were in fact broken up and that the truma and the truma was on top of them. Actually, by the way, I should mention, as far as the urine, the Rambam has a bit of a different explanation. We just had it recently in Gimel Parakim of Rambam. The Rambam explains that if you have one container that has in it human urine and animal urine, and you're not sure, it's exactly half and half, so you're not sure whether there's enough animal urine there to be mavakel the human urine, then the Rambam says that's the case where we would burn truma. Anyway, the point is, we're saying in all these six cases, as long as you know that truma touched the thing, even though the actual tumah itself is only a suffix, because you don't know where the caver is, you don't know if the bones were broken up, or you don't know if this urine comes from a zav, et cetera, we still say, sofin as a truma. In all those cases, you burn truma because of it. And the Mishnah continues, Rav Yossi, afal suffix magon v'shus ha-yachid sofin. Rav Yossi says, not only if it was a vade that they touched it, in Rishus HaYachid, says Rabbi Yossi, where we know in general suffix tumma b'Rishus HaYachid is tame, as we learned a few days ago. So even if it's only a suffix, but it's in Rishus HaYachid, so even if it's only a suffix whether it touched them, you would still have to burn the tumma, says Rabbi Yossi. V'chamim Rishus HaYachid toilin v'Rishus HaRabim tohodin. The Chachamim say that no, if it was in Rishus HaYachid, then you have to suspend the tumma and not burn it. Rishus HaRabim tohodin. And if it was in Rishus HaRabim, then it would be tohor, because sofik tumah Rishus HaRabim is tohor. So again, so according to the Tanakhama, only if it definitely touched, whether in Rishus HaYachid or Rishus HaRabim, then you would burn it. But if it was a sofik, whether it touched, then you have the Machlokes Rav Yossi and the Chachamim, what you do. The point is, we have that list of six. Ula tells us that all those six things, they made that takana in Usha, that you burn truma because of any of these six things. Again, we said the Chachamim the Sanhedrin was located in Usha sometime after the Churban, a couple of decades after the Churban. So you're talking 100 or more years after the Rabbanan, 80 years before the Churban. So what are you telling me that the Rabbanan 80 years before the Churban said that you burn truma that touches the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim? If now we're saying that they only made that takana in Usha.
Which was how long after the Churban?
Which was sometime after the Churban. I mean, we don't know exactly. We have the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah gives us a list of the 10 places where the Sanhedrin went into Golis. It went, as we said before, from Lushka to Gozis. We said it went to Chanuyas, from Chanuyas to Yerushalayim, from Yerushalayim to Yavne, etc. And then twice the Sanhedrin was in Usha. So both times were after the Churban. So we don't know how long after the Churban, but we know that it was sometime after the Churban. Meanwhile, we said before, the Chachamim who made the Takana to burn Truma, that touches Eretz Amin, we said were 80 years before the Churban. So you're talking 100, you're talking a little bit, either side, 100 years difference. No, we have to reconstruct it like this. Again, we have to remember now that we have three different groups of Chachamim to deal with. We have Yossi ben Ya'ezer and Yossi ben Yechanan, who we said were long before 80 years before the Churban, because there were four generations before Hillel and Shammai. Then we have the Chachamim 80 years before the Churban, which is in the times of Hillel, or his descendants. And then you have the Chachamim in Usha after the Churban. So how does it work? It's like this. Ella. So the answer is like this. Also, in who goes around Gusha Liflois Ba'avir of Leifu. The original takana of Yosef ben Ezer and Yosef ben Yochanan was that if Truma touches a chunk of dirt from Eretz Amim, that you have to be toilet. You just suspend it, you don't eat it, you don't burn it. Ba'avir of Leifu, and the takana was that they did not make any takana about the airspace of Eretz Amim. But also, Rabbanon de Shmonim Shana goes around Ba'avir of Leifu. Then the Rabbanon, 80 years before the Churban, which is again four generations after Yosef and Yossi, they made the takana that in both cases, they said that as far as the Gush, we're leaving things alone, we're leaving it the same as Yosef and Yossi made it, that we're not burning the Truma, we're only being toilet, but we're adding a new detail that we're adding also the airspace of the Eretz Amim that you're also toilet. But also, Usha, then, after the Churban, in Usha, they made the takana Gazru Agusha Lutz, right? They made the takana that if Truma touches the dirt of Eretz Amim, you have to burn it, which is what we said, that was one of the six cases where you burn Truma. Ba'avira kidekoi koi, and meanwhile, they left the airspace as it was, they left it to your only toilet. So those are the three stages, then, Lamaskana. So again, the three stages are, when it comes, so in other words, with each item within Truma touching the dirt of Eretz Amim or touching or being in the airspace of Eretz Amim, in each case you only have two stages. But all together, by combining those things together, you get three stages. You have, when it comes to the dirt of Eretz Amim, we're saying that Yossi and Yossi made the takana to be Tola Truma. Later on, the Chachamim 80 years before the Churban left that as is. So from Yossi and Yossi's times until Usha, several hundred years, the rule was only that if it touches the dirt of Eretz Amim Yitoyla, in Usha, after the Churban is when they made the Gzera that you burn the Truma. Then as far as the airspace of Eretz Amim, the first time we hear of anything of that is 80 years before the Churban. Up until that point, Truma is in the airspace of Eretz Amim, nothing happens to it. Yossi and Yossi didn't do anything with that. The Rabbanon 80 years before the Churban are the first ones to make a takana about the airspace of Eretz Amim. That Truma that goes in there has to be suspended, has to be toilet. And the Rabbanon in Usha left that alone and left that Zera as it is. They didn't add anything to that. Okay, so that then, so now we understand what happened in each of those stages. Okay, so we'll stop here for tonight, and we'll continue